Recorded Books and RB Digital present The Best Science Fiction of the Year, Volume 4, edited by Neil Clark. Narrated by Karen Chilton, Morgan Hallett, Catherine Ho, Luis Moreno, Jennifer O'Donnell, and Richard Poe. When We Were Starless, by Simone Heller. Narrated by Jennifer O'Donnell.
When we set out to weave a new world from the old broken one, we knew we pledged the lives of our clutches and our clutches' clutches to wandering the wastes. Season after season, our wind readers find us a path through the poison currents, and our herds scuttle over molten glass seas and pockmarked plains into the haunted places where the harvest is plentiful. We move swiftly, outpacing vapors and packs of wild dogs alike, leaving only the prints of our tails in acrid sands. This wasn't entirely true. We left other things, too, dear and precious. But this was how it was told by the elders when the veiled moon was high and we were cuddled up with our cozy stones. On the moonless nights, though, they spoke of ghosts, beckoning wraith lights and treacherous silent ones, and all the other types we had classified, and the multitudes that still waited for our soothing hands out among the ruins. They spoke of ghosts like they were the ones to handle them, when it was always me. So when Warden Renke strode up to my resting place on the outskirts of the half-shaped camp, the stark white paint of her dread screen slapped on in haste, I knew what she needed. Someone found another ghost. Yes. My longing glance went to the grub and root stew some kind soul had left next to the pack serving as my pillow, still lukewarm from a hot stone placed at the bottom of the bowl. I reached for the harness with my tools instead. It's in the dome structure to the east. Asper ventured there in search of the light metals his weaver prefers. He meant no harm. He knows we need every spare part he can churn out. Said he saw strange lights. All right. It could be nothing, or just another minor ghost, which I would have laid to rest before the deep night chill encroached. I stood and fingered my engraved pliers, waiting for Renke to disappear like they all did when it came to my work. But the warden fixed me, her pupils mere slits. Eat your fill first, blessed. We need you to stay strong. Truss won't be able to step in for you. And he hadn't stepped in for years now, since the day he became a respected member of the tribe. But I didn't say that. How is he? I asked instead. Renke looked back to where the first weaver-spun tent poles came together, as if she could see the pallet there, the thin mat of woven vines stained with blood. He's barely conscious. You should visit him as soon as you've cleansed yourself. It could well be my last chance. One shift in the weather, and we'd be running again, leaving our excess baggage behind. Truss never passed up an opportunity to teach a lesson, so it would probably be me he'd ask for the song of passing, and I was afraid it would be more than I could take. People's hearts, as hardened and barred as they were a different matter from the hearts of ghosts. I took one big mouthful of stew and swallowed. I'll take care of this ghost, Warden. This spot will serve as a fine resting place and see us recovered to full strength. Renke cast a doubtful glance down at her freshly spun leg brace, for she, too, hadn't walked away unscathed. Report to me when it's done. I'll put harvesting on hold, so hurry. No way to know how long the winds will grant us. The run-in with the Rust Breed had not been my fault. I was a good enough scout. I scoured inaccessible ruins for scarce materials, and I never ran the tribe into the lairs of the befouled crab lion or let anyone's mind become ghost-shifted. But when the heat-baked ground of a salt flat we were crossing was suddenly riddled with burrower holes, a full legion of the writhing, rearing, centipedal creatures already upon us, all I could do was to change the gentle hum of the lope concord to the jarring trill of the rush, and find us a path out of this trap. The air had been filled with the dry stick sounds of the rust breed's milling legs and the sharp smell that went for communication among them. But for all their legs, we were the better runners, and we made it. Barely. The hindquarters of our sole gear beast were a fused mass of metal and dried fluids from a rust breed feeder. And I didn't want to think about Truss's side, which had been similarly exposed. Others, like Renki, had been burned badly too. But he had been the only one to suffer a bite and get the corrosive substance under his scales. The ruined place I had led us into was vast and violent, some of its canyons carved by storms, and some designed by its unholy builders long ago. We had been following these shadowed paths for hours, paths I would have preferred to scout before bringing in the tribe. As it was, I had to lay ghosts to rest on the run, which was a contradiction in and of itself. I skirted the camp, listening to the whirring sounds of dozens of weavers busily spinning pots and ropes and all the things we would need to shelter and recover. Bits of Asper's cleansing chant drifted over the jagged scenery. He would be fine. Surely he had run at first sight, not even checking if it was a real ghost or just a reflection on an unexpectedly untarnished surface. It took more than that to risk ghost shifting. But the tribe was skittish. He would sing half the night. Out of the rubble and partially collapsed buildings around the camp, two ruined structures protruded into the upper airs like teeth, broken and half melted. Loose material flung up by the poison winds had merged with the original walls like flowstone. No such thing marred the surface of the dome. Its sides were certainly blackened like everything else, and even blacker holes yawned, where some of its hexagonal segments were missing, but the telltale pockmarks to determine downwind shelter were nowhere to be seen. It loomed over the rubble, as if to claim some things were unbreakable, no matter what. We would prove it wrong, if I had my way and we stayed. Because that was what we did. We cleansed the ruins by harvesting them, by feeding their very substance to our weavers, and rendering it pure and useful to be sold to the settler townships up in the mountains. Only this time, we would need every scrap for ourselves to survive. The entrance to the dome structure was a narrow, curved tube. When I reached the barrier of two thin, clear panes of glass, they swished apart, almost soundlessly, releasing a draft of cool air from within. Asper must have been desperate if he had gone beyond that. I took a moment to camouflage and darted through, curling my tail in case of nasty surprises. This would have been a stupid way to lose it. At some point in the past, granules of debris had blown in, but the layer was thin and petered out after a few paces. When the portal closed smoothly behind me, one side grated a little bit on a piece of gravel that must have been displaced by my feet. My gaze was drawn upwards. The air of the dome was still. The evening light, eerily peaceful, as it filtered through the once transparent segments. Gone was the cleansing sing-song. Gone were the high winds keening in the cavity-riddled structures. It wasn't that there was no indication of violence in this place. The tail end of a colossal metal tube still hanging from steel cords fastened around its tapered nose had fallen and destroyed all manners of tables and glass cases on the floor. But it was as if it had happened centuries ago, and peace had been found in its arrangement. Anyone with a healthy fear of ghosts would have gone looking for the one whose invisible hand had moved the glass panes. I knew better. I was not after an inferior ghost tied to this entrance. My prey would be haunting the vast space, where the light was murky and the shadows were glistening. I went straight in to look for the veins that spoke of ghost activity, for the hiding places of ghost organs stored away in boxes for protection. Uncomfortably chilly layers of air enshrouded glittering heaps of shards. Once, I might have felt out of place, an unwelcome disturbance. But I had left my fear of ghosts behind, like an old skin, a long time ago. And what I had found instead was the unforeseen, and sometimes pure beauty. The tribe never knew. To them, beauty meant nothing. I could have shown them the brightest colors and patterns on my skin, and all they ever wanted were the dulled hues of sand and ashes, all the better to pick clean ruins like this one. In the end, I found absolutely no sign of a ghost inhabiting this space. I resigned myself to take care of the entrance and let go of my camouflage. When I turned around, there was something where there had been no one. Like a person, a solitary figure leaned on one of the undamaged glass cases. The light pooled strangely around it. And when I flicked my tongue, the smell, the heat, and the heartbeat were all my own, and told me no other living being was in here with me. "Hello, little explorer," it said, with a clear, slightly hollow voice. The ways ghosts reacted to people were mostly limited to precise, fatal attacks, if they were of the aggressive kind, or simple things, like manipulating doors or following every move with a single red eye in the shell they animated, observant, even in afterlife. This one drifted over to me, mimicking a walk on two legs as best it could, lacking a tail. Its whole body was obscured by a bulky, silvery layer of clothing, its head round like a bowl. It seemed insubstantial, a ghost of subtle dangers. My breath quickened, but I stood my ground. When there was but a pace between us, I lifted my hand to wrap my knuckles against the semi-translucent head bowl with just a hint of bright eyes behind. The ghost quivered slightly as my fingers passed right through it, and on my skin, I felt an almost imperceptible sensation of heat. "Now, now, you're a cheeky one, aren't you?" It turned with me as I began to walk around it, cautiously looking for the veins tethering its body to its heart. "I understand you're curious, and I encourage you heartily to experiment, but your experience will be better if you refrain from touching me." The way it reacted to me, seemed to talk directly to me, was disconcerting. I felt a lump grow in my throat. Even now, there were no veins. They could still be under the floor, but I somehow doubted it. I had seen a few untethered before, even sought them out. They didn't need to animate objects, but move through thin air with a fluid grace. I knew they could be laid to rest with a bit of work. I just chose not to whenever possible. The world always felt lessened by their passing. "I don't see a tag on you, little explorer." The ghost's voice came from slightly above, so maybe it had stored its lungs somewhere. Finding them would at least be a start. "Would you mind telling me your name to avoid confusion?" I looked up at the strange specter in surprise. No amount of singing would redeem me in the eyes of my tribe if I volunteered my name to a ghost. Granted, I did talk to ghosts. It was a one-sided conversation, a game of pretending at its best. This ghost wouldn't even register my name. A name nobody had bothered to use since I became blessed. What harm could it do? To whisper, and hear it swallowed up by the still air of the dome. I flicked my tongue. "Mink. My name is Mink." The round head bobbed enthusiastically. "Welcome, Mink. Now, would you like to see the stars?" A flutter of anxiety rose in my stomach. This was more than a mere reaction. This was interaction. For a short moment, I felt this was not a ghost, but something else altogether. Something alive, and very old, and dangerous. I fought my unease with a snort. Stars? You're trying to trick me with fancy tales the elders tell to hatchlings, yes? That's what most come for, but we can certainly look at something else. The rocket, maybe? Or one of the landers? It drifted off a little bit, hands clasped behind its back. With a swooshing noise, the soft glow of wraith lights grew throughout the dome in at least 5 different places. There were sounds as well, sounds I recognized. Ghosts, many upon many of them, animating contraptions, whining in high voices, a legion of ghosts, seemingly springing into action in unison. I shielded my eyes and staggered back, caught myself on one of the tables shaken. Such a conglomerate of ghosts would take days to be laid to rest. Our wounded might not have days. They depended on the herd's output before the wind reader called us off. The untethered ghost had moved to hover next to me. "You seem upset, little explorer mink. Is there something wrong? Something I can do for you?" I held my face still buried in my hands and looked at the ghost through my fingers. Was it trying to help me? All I had ever been taught told me to run now, but I had never been the student Truss or the other elders had envisioned. That's impossible. "Let's try some music to lift your spirits." The ghost drifted back and forth expectantly. When nothing happened, I began to wonder if I should have said or done something. It heaved a great sigh. "Ah, I'm very sorry, little explorer mink. Some things seem to be amiss here. I thought I had just the right music for you, but now I can't play any at all, and I just don't seem to be able to fix this defect. Ah, I shouldn't be sad when I need to cheer you up, right? Don't you worry. I'll find a workaround." "You miss your music?" I had always suspected some ghosts liked music and tried to use this to my advantage. But this ghost had offered me consolation. It seemed genuinely upset it couldn't act on it. I didn't seek an advantage when I suggested, "I could sing for you." Truss would have called me ghost-shifted or straight out mad at this point. I had nothing yet, not even a classification. Just a growing sense of unease and a lot of work cut out for me. But there were many ways to a ghost's heart, and a non-aggressive calming approach might work just as well as exhausting oneself by tearing out every wall panel for clues. Or maybe I was just trying to rationalize my own desperate need for a song. It took some time to find my voice, because yes, I had sung to ghosts before, but never for a whole legion of them. Soon enough, I found the center of the dome was an excellent place to stand and sing. I did not sing a ghost song, but one of ours. The melody of the paean of manifest horizons rose strongly in the empty air, and it was more uplifting than the somber tones of the song of passing I usually sang in the forsaken places of the world, while making them a little bit more forsaken. It wasn't until after the first verse I noticed the second voice accompanying mine, in perfect harmony. At first, I was puzzled and amused to sing alongside those hidden lungs of the ghost. Then I felt my spirit lifted in a way I had not expected. Not to chant alone amongst the rubble of a past age, but to have a voice other than mine echoing, countering, running ahead in joy. When I reshaped the tune into a jubilating variation, and the ghost followed suit without pause, though, the dread feeling crept upon me again, made my voice veer off into a warning warble. I faltered, and the ghost sang the ending notes on its own. Ghosts were the remnants of the long dead past, and one thing they, or at least all the ones I had encountered, could not do was evolve, learn, grasp something new. This one had not only learned a song in a few heartbeats, but even how to mold it in the unique way of my tribe. And I finally had my classification and my name, and the absolute certainty that I would not be the one to lay this ghost to rest, or any of its manifestations, for that was what I faced. One vast ghost of many forms, one fabled entity that ruled this whole place, an annihilator of tribes, a cluster haunt. "What an amazing talent," it said, lifting its hand to its chest, where of course no heart resided. "Thank you." I tried to swallow against my dried-up throat, but only produced a strangled squawk. When I fled the dome, the ghost called after me. "Little Explorer Mink, do you really have to leave already? You haven't seen the stars yet." Terrified as I was, I would have crashed into the grating panes of glass, but the ghost moved this extension of itself out of my way, and I stumbled out before it could reconsider. This was what was going to happen. The camp would be left to the winds, half-shaped pots and tents melting into the ruined landscape. The marrow of our wounded would feed whatever happened to stumble upon this site. Our crippled gear beast would hold its lone wake. I would paint the warning sigil of our tribe on a nearby wall in green permastain so that no scout in their right mind would ever set foot in the dome again. And we would flee this place, maybe leave a trail of our injured as we ran. And we would never look back, never wonder what we had lost, not only in our lives, but also in the taking of the rare materials from the dome, in not observing the cluster haunt and learning about its ways. Or at least try to coexist. I had fled on impulse, fueled by the horrors our lore spoke of. It didn't seem so bad now that I had time to think and didn't see a spectral host coming after me from the dome. But how could I suggest this to a tribe who, by that very same lore, left its weakest members behind to die? I would be declared suicidal, a menace, unheard. For we were survivors, mere survivors. We never managed to be more than that, and some didn't even manage that much. We told ourselves that we made a difference, that we shaped a world. But one look at this ruined vastness told the truth. We didn't change a thing, and all our sacrifices were just to survive another day. It was enough, mostly, as long as we pretended it didn't tear our hearts out. I was perched on the remains of a toppled roof structure and looked out at the bug catcher lights dotting the camp's perimeter in the dark. They would glow long after we were gone. When I finally trotted over to the ring of lights, I vocalized a lesser warning sequence. "Scout incoming." I saluted the guard I knew would wait in the shadows beyond. "I need to see Truss. Get someone to apply the dread screen on him. I'm unclean." She hissed gruff acknowledgement, and by the time I entered the camp proper, every weaver had been moved out of my way, as well as sleeping mats and cooking utensils for good measure. A young herder, still gesturing her weaver backwards, lifted the eight-legged metal creature up into her arms and staggered away under its weight, even if it was far out of range of whatever evil emanations of mine she might fear. I saw Asper, too, hovering on the fringe of the camp, and obviously eager for news. His weaver easy to spot, because he was the only one to dread screen its carapace for extra security. At Truss's resting place, one of the hunters simply smeared the remaining paint in her hands onto her face and throat before I came too close. On Truss, the swirling white patterns had been applied with more care. He looked bad underneath, skin sagging in stiff folds, eyes sunken. His side was bandaged, the color of the rust-like substance eating away at him, already bleeding through. "Teacher," I said, kneeling next to him. He lifted one feeble hand, as if to keep me from propping him up.
"Talk to the elders, little Foster Hatch. Why come to me? They are the ones who decide our way."
They knew only one way, but I didn't say that. "You're one of them, old man. How are you? I was gone so long, and I was afraid you wouldn't..."
"Warden told you that, didn't she?"
He coughed, and I watched the stains on his bandage deepen.
"To keep you on your toes. She knows you're prone to getting distracted."
At that, he winked weakly at me. We had always kept my bolder adventures between the two of us, as we had our differences. I wanted badly to take his hand, to feel if there was any strength left in him, but he had never been fond of touch or sympathy.
"I'm not dead yet."
His voice was a low rasp.
"Won't run for days. But if the winds are willing, and you're keeping us safe, I'll eat the stuff that's trying to eat me. Just you watch."
At that, I felt all the color bleed out of my skin and fought hard to keep Truss from noticing. I had been selfish to come here, just so that I could say goodbye. "It might not happen," I offered softly. "It might not happen fast enough. And so many of us are wounded and exhausted. Even I would be hard-pressed to run now." Part of me wanted to tell him about the cluster haunt, but he hadn't scouted for years, and in his day, Truss had never been one to indulge in the presence of ghosts. I knew what he would have to say, and I didn't want to hear it. He said it anyway.
"Don't concern yourself with our weak and wounded, little Foster Hatch. We're prepared to stay behind, knowing the tribe will survive. The elders are aware of that. They know how to handle it."
"But they don't have to handle it," I whispered. Suddenly I felt Truss's hand on mine, cold and brittle. He started to say something, but in this moment, Renki strode up to us, the wind reader and the other two elders in tow.
"What news do you bring, blessed?" she asked. "Is your work done?"
I looked up at her, then back to Truss. There were days when I found joy in my job, when I felt I brought peace to the ghosts of old and betterment to the brand new world. Today, it felt like laying to rest everything I loved. "My work is never done." Renki came closer than most dared when I was unclean, to stare down at me.
"The herders are awaiting my command. Is it safe now, or do we move?"
There was no invitation to debate, no room for experiments. I only needed to utter the word. The decision was already made, had already been made since the day we set out to wander the wastes. I fought to keep my unruly colors under control. None of the tribe could actually read them, but Truss had seen most of the spectrum while teaching me, and even with his eyes half closed, he might be watching. Renki's crest rose halfway in impatience. I could feel the eyes of the herders on me, all prepared to set out, their weavers protected in the crooks of their tails. They would never admit that survival was not always enough. I squeezed Truss's hand one last time, and finally got up to look the warden in the eye.
"Send them out," I said. "This place is safe." The night sky was a black abyss, sucking my gaze upwards, and with it went my bravado and determination. No veiled moon shed its light upon the ruins. The stars, its fabled lesser cousins, were nothing but a story to ease the weight of the dark. I did not deserve to even think of a soothing story, because I had embarked on the darkest of tales. Cluster Haunt. Few claim to have seen one. The even fewer reliable witnesses weren't keen on telling what they had seen. Cluster haunts were said to be the rarest and mightiest of ghosts, spiteful of the living, and oh so strong, the most powerful ghost shifters, heart concealers, mind mimickers. Tribe vanishers. But I had told my lie, and I needed it to turn into truth. So instead of getting back to my lonely resting place, I went to the dome once more. Residual energies would keep the herders from entering only for so long, then I would either have found this heart or failed them all. First, I jammed a stone I had brought under the glass panes of the entrance. I didn't want to get trapped inside, and disabling the ghost's extensions piece by piece was one way I figured I could counter its cluster haunt abilities. I took my lamp into the pitch-black dome and began to turn over every larger piece of rubble to find a hint of ghostly veins, organs, anything. All too soon, a familiar pale glow came up behind me. "Little Explorer Mink, what a pleasant surprise to have you back." I looked up at the bowl-shaped head bobbing above the silvery suit. Why would it choose this appearance when it ruled so many forms? Why not a more threatening one? It hovered closer. "You were gone so fast last time. I thought maybe you didn't like it. But you've got them both, curiosity and spirit. Want to see them? They're right here, brought back to Earth after their duty was done." Wraithlight flared to life halfway through the dome to illuminate the shapes of two battered gear beasts. Their odd wheel legs seemed sturdy enough, but after a closer look, I found them to be perplexingly impractical. Their broad backs were plastered with strange contraptions, no room for stowage at all. They wouldn't carry even one of our wounded. "You'll find the whole story of curiosity and spirit on your personal memory vault," the ghost went on. "Please don't forget it next time you leave. It helps you relive your whole experience in here, at home." I ignored the gear beasts, but the ghost kept following me. "Have you lost something?" it wanted to know. "May I help you? Just ask away." As if it was a game Cluster Haunts liked to play. I wasn't here to talk, though. There were just not that many alternatives. No wall panels to peel off the glass-like sides of the dome. No secret compartments embedded in the smooth, hard floor. The rubble under the fallen tail of the metal tube the ghost had called a rocket was a big pile of shards, and even the base of the undamaged tables and cases were solid. So maybe talking was how I'd get to the heart of this ghost. I turned very slowly. "You'd answer all my questions."
"Really?"
"Sure. That's what I'm here for." The ghost hovered expectantly. I swallowed. I was a scout, not a master of eloquence. This could go horribly wrong. "Where is your heart?" Among all the reactions I had anticipated, I surely hadn't expected the ghost's pronounced shoulders to sink. "Ah," it said, in a somewhat small voice. "Well, you already saw on your first visit that I am not like you, and a heart is among the things that separate us." Its light grew dim. "Alas, I guess one could say my heart is up among the stars. That's where I always wanted to be. So maybe that's a justified notion." So the ghost really liked its tall tails. Liked them so much, it spun its heart-concealing fabrications around them in a way that made me feel all wistful. I could have asked about its veins and lungs next, or any other part of ghost anatomy a good scout knew to look out for. But the only thing I seemed to remember was how it had tried to comfort me earlier. And somehow, that made everything much more complicated. It had diligently shuffled after me, and I was looking at its blurry form through a thin sheet of clear material mounted on a table between us. "What are you called, then?" I asked finally. The ghost lifted its hand and dropped it again. "Oh, I... nobody ever calls me anything. I'm just here for your service. And on a better day, this should display the orbits of the main celestial bodies. It's in maintenance mode. I apologize for your inconvenience." Nonsense. I felt angry all of a sudden, and not just because I wasn't making any progress here, apart from trying to befriend a ghost. "People also don't call me anything since the blessing came upon me. But I'm more than the service I render." "I'm afraid that I am not." I crossed my arms and hissed in frustration. Even those old gear beasts had been named, however strangely. I could do better. "I'd like to call you Orion, then, if I may." It just hovered there, frozen. "I mean, we're not close enough for me to know your gender," I added. "So it's just a suggestion. Yes?" "It's a brilliant suggestion." The ghost beamed, radiating brightness. "Orion? That's very considerate." I thought so myself. It was a name from the same old tales that told of the stars. "Thank you, little explorer Mink. I'm attaching my name to all my memory vaults now." And in the newly brilliant light of Orion, I saw something off to the side. Something that shouldn't have been there. And yet there it was. Inside one of the glass cases, bathed in wraith light and completely still, sat a weaver. "Don't touch the exhibit, please." I had taken the weaver out and set it on the floor, where it had very frustratingly not shown the slightest inclination to move. Clearly, it hadn't been able to bask in a long time. "Little explorer, your interest in this ATU shows how bright you are. But I counted 384 defects in here already, and you really shouldn't add..." I gestured at the weaver. "What did you call that?" "People call them space spiders, but officially it's an advanced terraforming unit." Orion drifted to another thin glass-like sheet, this one larger, mounted on the floor. "Come along, see them in action." The weaver sat motionless. I would fetch this prize for my tribe, a new heirloom to complement our herds. But I also wanted to know how it had ended up in a glass case. Reluctantly, I followed the ghost. Still no music. Orion contemplated the large glass-like screen. "I'm sorry." "I'm sorry for adding another defect," I said, and I meant it. As much as Orion tried to make up for his failing contraptions with enthusiasm, I could still sense his distress. "Shall we sing again?" I did not feel like it. I couldn't see any horizons manifesting themselves in my near future. I was still here to lay Orion to rest. The sooner the better. Had I stumbled upon him while advance scouting, I would have turned my back and looked for another harvesting ground. But this was not an option with the tribe camping on the threshold, cultivating their superstitions. "Maybe later, little explorer Mink. For now, it will do. The display works just fine. Look." At first, I saw nothing. Nothing I hadn't seen before with minor ghosts. Ephemeral colors danced through the glass, almost too quick for the eye to follow. Then the whole screen, larger than myself, was filled with the image of a weaver. I sat on my haunches to get a better look. I understood now. Orion was showing me a vision. Moving mode, printing mode, charging mode, Orion said, while the weaver flickered through a series of motions, completely translucent, so I could see its intricate inner workings. This was followed by an impossibly long line of weavers scuttling up a smooth ramp, then fire and smoke. When the ATU set out to terraform other worlds, they are equipped to deal with every hostile surrounding, to transform every unusual or even hazardous material into something useful, Orion said, and I slumped to the floor, curling my tail around my legs. They are constructed semi-autonomous, with modes to work on individual projects, to collaborate, or to be operated by a higher-level controller. I must admit, I wasn't able to follow his tale. But then I had never worked with a weaver, so what did I know? The images drew me in, weavers glinting like gems in front of profound blackness, weavers swarming at structures I had never imagined, weavers working away at something that looked like the dome I found myself in, but under two bright, bluish suns. These are other worlds? I asked. I saw them, but I couldn't believe they were real. New worlds. Worlds not poisoned by a violent, unholy past. Orion's head bobbed enthusiastically. Yes, little explorer. There are many upon many, scattered among the stars. Everything you see in here, including the visitor center itself, was built to get there. Maybe you will travel to one of them yourself one day. I stood, fascinated, watching, and I felt fear clamp down on my heart, even as it soared. This, I knew, was ghost shifting. Ghosts telling about great things, about possibilities, about progress. It was not true. It just didn't happen. And when it happened, it was bad. This kind of thinking had destroyed the world. We were careful now, and we didn't pursue any stupid ideas. But it was beautiful, and that had always been my weakness. I was transfixed by the images as they flickered by, bathing me in the brightness of distant suns. My gaze drank up the swarms of weavers, spinning things far greater than we had ever dreamed of. And I realized they were so much more than what we had been using them for. This would be invaluable knowledge if the tribe could accept it. I wondered if they would even accept a ghost-touched weaver, and resolved to tell them I had found it far from the place of the haunting. I turned to look at the creature with renewed awe, but my colors flared in alarm at what I saw. The first light of day filtered in through the ceiling, and I realized I had lost the track of time over the ghost's stories. Several figures were clustered together near the entrance, shuffling and whispering. Among the dozens of weavers at their feet, the one marked white with dread screen clearly stood out in the front row. Asper and his fellow herders had come to harvest. They craned their necks, staring at me, staring at Orion. Visitors! The ghost began to drift closer. Are these your friends? More little explorers? I'd love to welcome them. No, Orion. I tried to prevent what could only end in disaster. Stay back, will you? The herders had already scattered. With hectic gestures, they maneuvered their weavers to hide behind them, while some broke and ran for the entrance, shrilling a warning.
Wait! Asper yelled. The Blessed is in the ghost's thrall. We have to rescue her. Get Renki! Hurry!
It's all right. I made two steps toward them to show I was free to go. He's non-aggressive. It was a futile effort. Most of them were crazed with fear, clogging the narrow entrance tube or fleeing along the walls of the dome. Asper, though, not only came for me, but
but managed to bully a fellow herder to march with him towards much more ghost activity than any of them had ever seen. "Asper, you have to watch this." I backed off toward the glass-like screen. "We were all wrong about the weavers." He grabbed my arm. "Hey." Orion drifted closer. Without letting go, Asper jumped. I stumbled and was caught by his friend, who dragged me to my feet without any respect for shoulder joints and their natural resistance to jerking. I hissed. "Hey," Orion said, louder now. "I cannot tolerate violence in here. This is a place of peace and learning. Now, behave yourselves and release Mink." A collective gasp rippled through the herders as they heard the ghost speak my name, and I used their surprise to detach myself. I could not let them take me. When they got me out of this dome, there would be no turning back and setting this right. Truss would die, unsung and alone, and I would not bring a new weaver and a new vision to the tribe. I tried to back away and babbled incoherent things that probably did nothing to convince them I was not ghost-shifted beyond repair. Orion's warnings became increasingly pressing. When Renke's fighters joined the fray, they pushed the fleeting herders back in and moved towards me, crests rising as Orion drifted in between us, as if to shield me. Then, cutting through the very fabric of this old, untouched space, I saw the glint of a spear flying. Renke's verdigris green color feathers were tied to its shaft. It passed right through Orion to bury itself in the screen containing the vision. A web of cracks appeared, and the light within died. Orion's voice shrilled, distorted, and much louder than before.
"Stop damaging the equipment and leave Mink alone now. She's under my protection."
In the silence that followed, a rustling sound came up. It was a sound we knew, but it had a wrongness to it that made everyone freeze. Instead of the chaotic concert of individual clinks and whirs, we heard our weavers march in unison. They came scuttling from all corners, flowing together like some big machine assembling itself. I knew this behavior. I had observed it moments before in the vision, but it was uncanny to see it executed, as if they had developed a shared, single-minded purpose all of a sudden. The others just stared, but some called out to their weavers, gesturing them back to no avail. I froze when I saw what their purpose turned out to be. They all came up to me, smoothly parting around me and flowing into a new formation, climbing upon each other and surrounding me with a barrier of spiky metal. And they were ready to defend. Asper and the other herders tried to intervene as the fighters tore into the formation, and they all got burned by spurts of heated material, seared by cutting lights, sparks flying off their scales. They had absolutely no experience with the way herds behave now, like a single organism lashing out. I tried to climb over my living protection, ready to leave with the tribe to end this. "Orion," I cried, "stop, please."
"Habitat security initiated. Please cooperate."
"Orion." But he didn't respond to me anymore. And I remembered the most important thing a scout has to recognize, the point when fighting would only lead to greater loss. I sounded the rush.
"Flee. This is a cluster haunt."
Renke took up my tune, aggressively urging on the herders who still called their weavers. I don't know what really made them break and run in the end. It could have been the herder who recognized the carapace of her weaver and tried to yank it out of the formation, only to get cut so badly we had to carry her. Limping and crying, we fled, and Asper's look was so hurt and betrayed, I wanted to camouflage out of his sight. When I reached the entrance tube as part of the last group supporting and dragging each other, I thought I heard a faint whisper from the dome. "Safety can only be guaranteed in the habitat.
staying is recommended.